Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Don Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year.
Happy liturgical epiphany, which isn't real epiphany. Happy lazy epiphany? Do we want to go there? Do we want to do that?
No, we don't. No.
We're recording this on Sunday, January 3rd, 2021. And this is liturgical epiphany. I think all dioceses. I don't think there's any dioceses that don't celebrate it today. I think it's universal. In the U.S.
In the U.S.
Yes. The rest
if you're
of
not
the world.
In the, if you're not in the U.S., we have no idea what you're doing.
Yes, it's just Sunday.
However, we made the executive decision here in the Bettinelli household to celebrate Epiphany on Wednesday, the 6th.
We usually celebrate Epiphany, like as a family, a celebration on the 6th.
Sometimes we do go with liturgical Epiphany on Sunday just because with... When it falls on a work day, a school day, sometimes we in the past have not had a lot of extra time to dedicate to, you know, feasting and celebrating and opening presents.
Well, see, that's the important thing is the reason why we have this separation in our family is because, as we've said before, we do some Santa presents on Christmas Day, but we do most of the big Christmas giving, the gift giving on the Feast of the Epiphany, which is a custom you brought from your family.
Yes.
And so sometimes, you know, when Epiphany is a little later, it gives us a little extra time for Santa Amazon to get its sleigh to the house with the stuff that we need to give.
But this year there is the consideration of mail delays,
yes,
which have been heavy this year.
I've been waiting 2 weeks to get a new rasp grater from Amazon.
But then there's also the consideration that today was our youngest child's
birthday. Yes, it was Lucy's birthday is today, the 3rd.
And just for ease's sake, and so that her birthday didn't get swallowed up into the celebration of everything else, we just sort of decided to...
Much to the chagrin of one child.
There is a child who has a hard time waiting for an extra 3 days for Epiphany presents.
Oh, delayed gratification.
Never mind that this child is one of the children whose presents aren't here yet, which we've pointed out, but that somehow doesn't actually make anything better. It just makes them...
Well, it just makes it worse.
Makes them feel more slighted.
My presents aren't here yet. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's that.
So
we had a really nice birthday celebration today, though.
Let's talk. So as is our custom with birthdays is we let the kids open their presents first thing in the morning. We get up and open those up because in the past, when we did presents after dinner, you'd have dinner, you'd have presents, you'd have cake. It's chaos. They just opened presents and now they have to go to bed. So we decided the better part of valor would be let them open the presents in the morning, separate it out over the day, you know, the different parts of the celebration. They have their presents all day long that they can play with. And then at dinner time, you know, we have a special dinner and then they can have cake.
And now that you aren't going to work at dark 30 in the morning, that's possible.
Right. Yes. If I were leaving the house at 6:30 in the morning like I used to.
We would not be doing presents before work.
Right. Right. So it all works out for us. This first thing this morning, so Mass is at 10:30, so that gives us some time to get the lay of beds out of bed and up and caffeinated and ready, because most of the children are up and bouncing off the walls beforehand, waiting, and so Lucy was up, and so we opened her presents, and So it was a Star Wars themed. In fact, it was very definitely a Grogu themed birthday. Yeah.
it was most definitely. She got a...
So we should, for those of you who aren't Star Wars fans, I know there's a few still of you still out there. Grogu is also what you may have heard of as Baby Yoda from The Mandalorian.
His name has been revealed now.
As Grogu. Yes, little spoilers.
So, yeah, she got a t-shirt and a face mask and a doll, like
the baby figurine. Grogu doll figurine. It's plastic. It's not soft.
Yeah, it's not soft, but it's kind of doll sized. I don't know.
Yeah, it's doll. It's like it's not like a little figure, like a the old Kenner figures or a minifig or something. It's like it's about maybe a foot tall. The tip, not quite. Maybe
8 inches.
Yeah, posable. You know, the arms move and the ears waggle, and and so a face mask, like a COVID mask. Sort of thing with it on it. Although she did say it had a funny smell, so we were going to have to wash it before she'll wear it.
Yeah.
And
that was an impulse buy at CVS. So it was totally like, oh my gosh, this is so cute.
Yes.
I have to get it.
She wanted to wear it as a mask, but the...
It was too smelly.
It was, she didn't like the smell. So the baby Grogu today was very popular. Oh my gosh. Like he was... Everywhere doing everything with all the kids.
Yes.
he came to mass with us. He stayed in the car, but... Yeah, he came in the car. But they were like, oh, he's eating lunch. Don't let him eat up all your food. And like they were doing all the things with him today. All of the kids were all gaga over Grogu.
Yeah, it was a huge hit.
Good call, Mom.
And she also got some books, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah. Bink and Golly,
yeah.
Which Bella and Sophie remembered. I guess it's been a while since we've had Bink and Golly in the house.
They were favorite library books, but we never had bought them just because, I don't know, we seem to have them out from the library all the time anyway, so.
And we kind of ran I think we kind of all got kind of tired of them a little bit.
I don't know if we get tired of them. They're really cute. It's a cute
Maybe I'm speaking out of turn. Some of us get tired of reading it. But in any case, they are great books. They're about the two little girls who live in an imaginary world where they live. One lives in a tree and another, like they don't have parents or families, but they're these two girls who are best friends in this world. It's like our world.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, they kind of drift in and out between like sort of reality and fiction, and they're best friends, and they're just, there's something really sweet about their friendship, but they're also kind of wry and sassy and sarcastic. They strike the perfect note for me, and they're eminently quotable. Like they've become part of our family's vocabulary, which the younger kids really don't understand why. Anytime somebody says that they're baffled, I always say, I'm baffled, said Bink. yeah.
So they kind of remind me of the cuter, the better of Pixar characters.
Yeah, they could totally be Pixar characters. I would love to see Bink and Golly actually made into like Pixar shorts.
Yeah.
Like they shouldn't be long, but little shorts.
Like 10-minute videos, like animations. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not live action, animated.
Right.
That actually would be pretty good. So, yeah, Bink and Golly.
And then she got the new Ben Hatke book, Julia's House Moves On, which is really sweet. Mm-hmm. And Anna Hibiscus.
Yes.
Which has been our current favorite.
We didn't own that. That was a library book. So, but now...
Now she owns the first one in the series.
Now we own one of the books, yeah. Yeah, and then I think that's about it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and a bag of Hershey Kisses.
right. She loves milk chocolate so much. I just got her own bag of Hershey Kisses, and she said, can I eat these? I'm like, yeah. She said, can I eat as many as I want? And I said, it's your birthday. Yes, you may. And I don't know how many of them she consumed. She was being very generous in sharing them with her siblings.
Yeah.
I have a feeling she ate quite a few of them, though.
That girl has that. Now that milk chocolate is on the menu, she is
gaga. It's awesome. She's
gaga and Grogu. So we've mentioned before, our custom is that on birthday, the birthday person gets to choose what they want. We usually have gone out for dinner to the place of the choice of the birthday person. Of course, in 2020, we couldn't do that. We realized the last time we went out to dinner was for Sophie's birthday when we went to Wahlburgers,
which was in March,
the beginning of March 4th. So yeah, it's been a long time, but since then we've done takeout. And so Lucy really loves spring rolls.
Vietnamese spring rolls. Not Chinese spring rolls.
Right. Definitely different.
Totally different.
Right. And because they're the ones that she could eat. She's got the allergies and all that other stuff. So she can have these. And so she really likes. And so, in fact, I think the last several years, her choice has been pho, to go to the Vietnamese restaurant, which I have no problem with because I love pho.
Right. She just got, like, a couple orders of spring rolls. I think she ate like four of them.
Yeah. So there's this new place, this new pho place. We are so lucky because the town right next to us has a large Vietnamese community. In fact, it's a Vietnamese Catholic parish, St. Bernadette. They have like Vietnamese masses.
Are they Vietnamese? I didn't know.
There's a large, it's been for a while there. In fact, when I worked for the Archdiocese, I had to go there for some ones. That's one of the places I had to go on a Sunday for the Catholic appeal.
Uh-huh.
Just to make sure everything was going okay. And it was the Vietnamese mass. It was kind of cool. I didn't stay for the whole thing. But so there's a big Vietnamese community. So there are a lot of Vietnamese shops, groceries, restaurants. And there's a new pho place that delivers via Grubhub and DoorDash, which we ordered from. And we've done it once. We've gone from them once before and we'll ordered again. They are really good.
It was really, really
good. You can get a bowl of 10 spring rolls. Those spring rolls aren't small, but for our size family, that's about the right size. It was just about the right number. Maybe just like if we got 9, it would have been enough, I think.
Yeah.
She had 4, 3.5. I think she kind of petered out after 3. And then we got some pho, getting takeout pho is really tricky because they have to separate the
hot ingredients and the cold ingredients.
Yeah, the broth basically separate from everything else. And then you got a really good vermicelli dish.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what all was on it. It was like vermicelli bowl, and it had a couple grilled shrimp, and it had a couple meatballs, some like thin sliced grilled beef. I think it was beef.
Yeah,
and then some shrimp paste
on sugarcane.
I didn't really see the sugarcane. I don't know.
I'm not sure how that works, but that's what it was called. It was called shrimp paste on sugarcane.
Anyway, it was like this like shrimp paste cake, which I've had before, and then served on a bowl of the vermicelli with like lettuce and bean sprouts and carrots and cucumbers and things, and it had this like crispy. It was like an egg, like a crispy Chinese egg roll shell, but it was empty.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen that before, and it was really, really good. It was just like the crunchy shell part.
I had a little taste of the shrimp paste thing, and I got to tell you, I really like it. I love pho, and every time I go to Vietnamese places, I'm like, I'd like to try these other things, but I really love pho, and I don't want to give up my opportunity to have pho today. So
I have really come, good. I mean, I like the soup, but I've come to be the point where I actually end up getting like shrimp paste vermicelli bowl sorts of things much more often. I really, really love the grilled shrimp and the shrimp paste.
Right. Right.
It's kind of one of those things that at first I was like, I'm not even sure I like this, but I can't stop eating it. It was very similar to my first experience of sushi, which was sort of the same. Like, I don't know if I like this, but I can't stop putting it in my mouth.
I was just thinking something Bella was saying about the Vietnamese meatball watercress soup that we actually had this week. That she what is it? She doesn't like how much she wants it. Like when she starts eating it, she can't stop. That's her thing.
Yeah, I think again, she's not super big on the taste, but there's something really satisfying about it, and you can't stop eating it.
Well, I got the pho, and I always like after eating it, I'm like, I always have a little like epinephrine, not epinephrine. Is it epinephrine? I get a little, that little high, that little like feeling good.
Having not epinephrine.
It's not epinephrine. What is it? I forget what the word is. Getting old. So that was dinner. And so she got to choose that. But she, when we were talking about it, I was saying, what do you want? She was kind of wavering, like, oh, I kind of want sushi, but I kind of want, egg, you know, spring rolls. I'm like, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to make a special deal because she's the youngest and she gets spoiled. And I said,
You would not have done this for any of the other kids.
I might not have, unless they were really nice to me. But I said, I'll tell you what, after Mass, I'm going to go to Whole Foods. And I'm going to buy some of the Whole Foods, you know, the sushi, the pre-made sushi. And I had to get some other stuff too. I had to get, like, we were out of some things. So I did. I went. I got a lot of sushi.
It was a lot of sushi.
It was a lot of sushi.
It was really good too.
Yes.
There was this like sushi that had
crunchy shrimp tempura roll.
Oh my gosh. The crunchy tempura bits. So good.
Right. There was actually leftover in the package.
There was a lot of tempura bits left in the bottom, and I was just eating them straight.
So we had cut up avocado for one of the kids had nachos. You know, you had made nachos. And you had cut up some avocado and you're putting it on the avocado.
Oh, yeah. Just slices of avocado with little crunchy tempura bits on top.
Yes.
Oh, it was so good.
Well, I bought a lot of sushi. And that went fast. All of our kids. This is why we don't get sushi that often, because they all love it.
All five of them adore sushi.
Right. Now, they all have their preferences. Like, Anthony doesn't like anything that has avocado in it.
Right.
But
he likes spicy.
But he likes the spicy stuff. Right. What is Ben's? Does Ben have a preference?
I think they all
have their preferences. Some of them, like, will eat anything. Like, Sophie will eat anything. But so we did that too. It was
a birthday extravaganza.
It was an indulgence. I'm not sure I wouldn't have done it if we hadn't just got our stimulus check. You're welcome, Whole Foods. We've stimulated you. And the local Vietnamese restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't feel bad about that. Because Amazon needed. Jeff Bezos needed stimulus, right?
No, not really, but okay.
Yeah, I'm just a little semi-political aside. I'm thinking the biggest recipient of the stimulus benefit is going to be Amazon, as people are ordering stuff in various ways.
Yeah, probably.
Its subsidiaries. Anyway, that's politics. Let's not talk about that. Anyway, aside from that, so we had New Year's.
New Year's was good.
Yeah, we should talk about that. So
did we do for New Year's?
Well, New Year's Eve. We watched a movie. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
And then we didn't really do anything.
New Year's Eve.
For once, we never do anything for New Year's Eve.
No.
But for once, everyone was in the same boat as we were.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think even when I was young and unmarried, I maybe went to like a handful of New Year's Eve parties, but mostly I was like introverted out after Christmas and.
Well,
and everything. So I just like staying home with a book is sort of my New Year's Eve speed.
Well, the funny thing is when I was younger and single, I didn't like going to New Year's Eve parties because all the couples would, you know, kiss at midnight, you know, and the whole thing. And now that we're married, you're in the other room. I'm in here watching something or I'm getting to bed. It's like, oh, happy New Year. Good night. And waving across the room anyway. So it's not even a big deal. It's totally introvert New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
So
we had like a nice dinner and.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're not like big, I don't know, celebration people. Like we celebrate things, but there are certain things we don't make a big deal out of. Like, you know, it's a new year. Hey, that's great. It's a new year. We, I don't know. I don't think it's the biggest deal in the world to slip the calendar over to the next year. You know, it's like, yeah, cool. It's, you know, think about the year that's been, the year that's coming, etc. But it's another day, you know. But New Year's Day, we went to Mass. We were able to go to Mass for Feast of Mary, Mother of God. And that was good. But I don't think we really did much of anything.
We,
yeah, no, we just kind of hung. Did the kids watch a special thing? I don't think so. I mean, honestly, I did a bunch of paperwork Then I was dealing with the problem with SQPN's podcast feeds, which were down, which you wouldn't have noticed. The only one that was the podcast that dropped was the Mysterious World one. So that was the only one anyone noticed wasn't feeding. So I was trying to deal with that. I don't know what it is about New Year's Day, but that is like a tech disaster land for me. Every year, something tech breaks. Our websites. This year was the podcast thing. I don't know what it is, but other than that, like, did we? I don't think we really did anything. We just kind of hung out.
Yeah.
So, which is why I didn't write anything down for New Year's Day. We might think of it some, as we go along. We'll come back to it. So let's talk about the food we've been making. Oh, we did a lot of cooking on New Year's Day. You made a challah.
Was that on New Year's Day or the day before?
No, it was New Year's Day. Well, did you make the challah the day before? You did some cooking because I also, that was when I made the mushroom risotto.
Oh, I think I made it on the day of.
Yeah. So I made a porcini mushroom risotto, which is one of my favorite dishes. I really love that earthy umami flavor of porcini mushrooms. So it uses the dehydrated ones with the richness of the rice and the cheese. It was really good. Now, I used a new recipe for this. It was, I think it's the America's Test Kitchen recipe for that I used. The Cooks Illustrated recipe. And it mixes porcinis with the regular, baby bellas or cremini mushrooms. And you do still, like the whole risotto letting it absorb and then adding more, but you don't have to constantly stir it like you normally do, which is good. I'm glad you don't have to do that. But it did take a long time.
Risotto is complex. It's fiddly.
It's a bit fiddly. But they finally had arborio rice. I've been wanting to make this for a while, and they finally had arborio rice at the grocery store. So I had gotten some. But it was really good, and there's leftovers because the kids don't eat it. Try it; it's good. But what do you think of it?
It was good.
Yeah. Now it's different from your pumpkin risotto.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's really tasty. I just can't eat that much of a rice dish at all. So like, it's a nice side dish, but as a main dish, I kind of want like more things on the table.
Yeah.
We ended up pairing it with your
soy sauce wings. We've talked about those before.
Which were good.
So I had 4 pounds. I bought like a 4 pound package of wings at the grocery store, which were on sale, which was great. I could have bought two of them because the kids love the soy sauce wings. They're so good because they're not spicy.
I actually prefer buffalo wings, but.
Well, I do too. But as a sort of sweet and sour sort of like it's so soy sauce and brown sugar marinated with garlic and then baked. It's super easy. It's baked. So easy. So good. I made that. They really love that. But also had to make the chicken thighs just as a backup because I wasn't sure there'd be enough that they would eat. Because the chicken thighs. Oh, made the broccoli with hollandaise sauce.
Which is a Scott family holiday tradition. We used to call it holiday sauce at my house because my mom always made broccoli with hollandaise sauce for like everything.
And this
birthdays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter.
Yours came out better than mine. I made it recently and it was too salty, but yours came out much better, much less saltier than mine was. And it's a blender. You just dump the stuff in the blender.
I love it. It's blender. And I even used previously frozen egg yolks. I'd like needed the whites for a recipe. And so I just threw the yolks into the freezer so they wouldn't go to waste. And I was a little bit concerned about whether that would yield a good consistency. And
it worked perfect.
I like tripled the amount of lemon juice in it because I like really lemony hollandaise.
Mm-hmm.
I might have added a little extra butter. But yeah, they came out perfect. Consistency, really thick and not runny at all. I was happy.
Yeah. So that was a really good meal. But the other thing we made this with today, we were talking about, was Lucy's birthday cake.
Well, I made the cake yesterday, actually.
Sure, but we had it today.
Yeah.
So why don't you talk about what you did for that?
So she wanted a chocolate cake, and I wanted to celebrate the fact that she can eat dairy by making a sour cream, not sour cream, cream cheese frosting.
Mm-hmm.
So she still can't eat wheat. So we needed a flourless cake. And I really like almond flourless tortas. So I found this recipe for a torta caprese, which just looked fabulous. It was online at Food 52. What I loved about this recipe is that it's very versatile and adaptable. It uses ratio, equal parts, almond flour, dark chocolate, butter, and sugar. And so you just do it by weight. So whatever you have, like the, you know, ingredient that you have, like the least of, you can just weigh it and then weigh all your other ingredients until you have the same proportions of all of them. And so you just melt your dark chocolate in a double boiler, then you throw in your butter, then you throw in your sugar, then you throw in your almond flour, and then you can add some flavorings. We opted for an unusual combination of flavorings, which was lemon zest and dark rum.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've done all that, and we added a little bit of vanilla too, and then you add your egg yolks and stir that all in, and then you whip up your egg whites into a nice stiff peak, and then you fold it in, which gives you that nice fluffy texture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you could definitely taste the lemon and the rum, not as strong flavors, but just as like delicate notes in the chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it worked really well. It made the chocolate feel lighter and less heavy and less like cloyingly rich.
Right.
It just kind of brightened it up a little bit. And then with the cream cheese frosting, it was just cream cheese, a little bit of butter, and some heavy cream, since we have tons of heavy cream in the fridge.
Yes.
Just to lighten it up a little bit, and then cocoa powder and powdered sugar. If I'd been making this cake for adults and not for kids, I would have probably thrown some rum into the cream cheese frosting as well and made it a little bit rummier. Mm-hmm. And I think that would have been perfect. I was a little bit hesitant to add too much flavor to the frosting because I didn't know if the kids, I didn't want Lucy to hate it.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how, because of her allergy, we've discovered the Spanish tradition. Like there's a Spanish tradition of almond cake that's almond, not wheat flour.
Well, this is actually Italian.
Right.
Italian and Spanish.
Right. Well, Capri, which is the island, has Spanish and Italian influence on it, both.
Right.
And so that's why it's caprese. It's not because it has tomatoes and basil and cheese. It's caprese because of the island of Capri, and it's a famous cake from there. And I just love the idea of discovering this, is that this was out there, and it's such a really good, it's not a compromise cake. This is, in some ways, these almond-based desserts are better than wheat flour desserts.
Oh my gosh, I love baking with almond flour, and even when she can eat wheat flour, I will continue to do a lot of baking with almond flour because it's just so moist and flavorful. And I think because it's more protein, it's sort of lower carb, and I don't feel as like overcarbed after eating an almond based baked good.
Hmm.
I mean, you're eating nuts,
right?
I mean, it's not all nuts. There's a lot of sugar and chocolate and butter in
right,
it too.
Right.
But there's a substantial portion of it is
protein, not carb.
Is not right.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, there for those who are seeking to avoid carbs, it's also a nice change for them. So, highly recommended. I'll put the link in the show notes. You can just Google, or you could Google Torta Caprese Food 52, and it'll be the first link that comes up. That's what came up when I Googled it.
Yeah.
So.
Really, really easy cake.
It's
and,
easy to do. It's just like you said, it's the ingredients that they do. It's like it's the same amount. 125 grams of blanched almonds, 125 grams of good quality dark chocolate, 125 grams of butter, unsalted butter, and 125 grams of sugar, and then three large eggs.
Right. So I modified it. I actually upped it a bit. So 125 grams is 4.4 ounces. I did 6 ounces.
Right. But it's all just ratio. If you keep the same ratio.
So I did 6 ounces of chocolate, 6 ounces of almonds, 6 ounces of butter, and 6 ounces of sugar. And then I had 4 eggs. So I made it in a 9-inch spring form, whereas the recipe called for an 8-inch. You can bump it up to 10 inches if you're serving more people or you just want a bigger cake. And I think she said she's done it with like 200 grams and 4-5 eggs.
Right.
So you can just add more eggs. It's really flexible like that. A little bit more egg, a little bit less egg. It's not going to make that make or break the cake.
Yeah. I mean, you could do pound cake. a pound. That would make a lot.
That would make a lot of torta caprese. And it's not, you don't have to frost it either. I opted to because like it doesn't feel like a birthday cake unless it's got frosting on it.
But you could dust it with confectioner sugar.
That's what the recipe calls for.
Yeah.
Which makes it lighter and less.
It's a classic, like, family Nona sort of eat through a bunch of ingredients thrown together with a lot of different ways you can put your own stamp on it. A dessert, you know?
Yeah.
It's got to be easy, you know? So, great. Totally recommend it.
I highly recommend, though, the lemon zest and the rum.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I would never have thought to put lemon zest in a chocolate cake, but it was perfect.
Or even orange zest.
Yeah.
A little bit of coffee, even.
If I'd had some coffee made up, I was really tempted, but I didn't really want to make a cup of coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
But coffee would have been a really nice ingredient.
Okay, we've been going on and on about this.
I have been. It was so good.
You know, we both have. We should do fun. So let's talk about what we've been reading and watching. So I want to talk about this new Pixar movie that just came out. It's on Disney Plus.
Okay.
It was supposed to be in theaters, blah, blah, blah. So it's called Soul. It's their latest animated movie.
I've seen people recommend talking about it, and I've heard no buzz about it, so I don't really know anything about the story.
So it's interesting. They recently did the one that was all about emotions. What was that one called?
Inside Out?
Inside Out. Okay, so that was about emotions. This one is about your soul and destiny and your passion. So I'll stipulate up front. The theology is all wrong. Okay. And it is a godless afterlife, a godless universe. There may be a God there, but he's not brought in at all. If you don't believe in God, you could just as much, you know, enter into this movie as if you do believe in God. So.
Okay. But does it feel like it's sort of.
It doesn't
anything
feel
in it is
anti-God.
Anti or.
No.
Like,
but there are
incompatible.
Yeah, there are a couple of bits that are incompatible. And plus, the theology, like, you have souls that are in a pre-birth state. Like, there are souls that are waiting to be put into bodies. So there's a bit of...
Right, yeah.
Which, you know, as Catholics, the soul is created at the same time as the body. We are not souls inhabiting a body. We are body-soul composites. We are both.
Right.
So that part... You know, I make allowances for where it's a movie. Okay, we're telling a story. It doesn't have to be completely accurate. I didn't think it was especially funny. Like, I like movies, you know, some of the Pixar movies, you know, like The Incredibles and stuff like that, they're like wicked funny. You laugh out loud. It's, you know, it's a lot of fun. I didn't think it was especially funny. And I didn't think it was especially innovative in its story in the sense of the story is pretty much what you think it's going to be. It's the Pixar story, okay? You know, you're going down the list of the moments that you expect to find in the, you know, the high, the low, the, you know, like you start out here, you go down, you go up again, you have the bonding between two characters, there's a misunderstanding that causes the break, the resolution, the good resolution has to come about with their resolution of their break. You know what I mean? Like the whole thing. And at the end, we've resolved and we are happy with what we've come up with, et cetera, as our resolution.
Okay, but that could be a really, really good movie or a really bad movie. Like, the fact that it hits those notes doesn't make it good or bad.
No, it just isn't new. It's like Toy Story was different, right? You know, the original Toy Story.
Was it? It kind of hit all the expected notes.
But it had unexpected, but it's how it traveled through that. This one, I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm just saying I didn't feel it was especially, it didn't feel especially new in many ways.
Okay. I guess I'm just not seeing that, like, whether you hit those notes or not isn't what makes it so new. It's how you hit them.
I guess. It's basically what you expect these sorts of animated movies to be. It wasn't different from any of the other ones in that sense. Okay, which doesn't make it good or bad, but it goes exactly where you expect it to go. That's it. Okay, there's a lot of music in it because the main character is a jazz musician, you know, aspiring jazz musician, and there's a lot of really good music in it. I really enjoyed that part. That was really nice, and the message was good. The message basically is that life is not about having a special purpose or mission in the sense of, I was born to be X. If I don't attain this thing that I think I want, my life is meaningless. You know, what's the purpose of life? You know, life is only meaningful if I get to be a performing traveling jazz musician instead of being a substitute teacher. You know, if I'm a substitute teacher or if I'm just a regular English teacher, I'm a kind of a failure in life because I didn't live up to my passion. The message is that's not what life is about. Life is about being the best of what you have to live your life.
So, like, it's okay to do one thing and have your passion be like your hobby and not your primary.
When we're young, we have dreams of what we want to be. I want to be a baseball player. I want to be a fireman. I want to be a musician. But by and large, most of us don't get to live out these passions or dreams. But that's not a failure because, you know, or I want to be a millionaire or a rock star or a movie star. That doesn't mean if you don't attain that, you're not a failure. You know, that's not the most important thing in life. What's most important about life in life? To love, to be good to other people.
So basically the same lesson as It's a Wonderful Life?
Basically.
Kind of George Bailey.
Right. This movie tended to be somewhat inwardly focused about me, how I feel in my life. It could have gone further to talk about being a little more outwardly focused as well, making the world a better place, being better for others, but that's fine. It could have gone further. It didn't have to. There was this weird little omission. The main character, there's this beat that goes sort of about how the main character is somewhat self-absorbed, and I didn't feel like they landed the plane on that, like in the sense of resolved it. They didn't, like...
He didn't make him less self-absorbed?
Like, there was a couple of moments where he kind of comes, gets confronted with the fact that he's previously been so self-absorbed about his drive to become the musician that he didn't notice the people around him and their hopes and dreams and lives and stuff. He tended to talk about himself. But we don't resolve that. Like, at the end, we don't get I'm not going to be so self-absorbed. I'm going to pay attention to other people. At least I didn't notice. I mean, I could have missed it, but it didn't seem to be a big thing. So that was kind of interesting. It was okay. I wasn't blown away by it. It was okay. I'd kind of put it, like, if I'm like comparing it to recent Pixar movies, like I'd put it just below Coco. Did you see Coco?
I did not.
So that I like Coco because a lot of the visuals and I love the Mexican American cultural aspects of that. That was really, really interesting. But also the visuals of the Day of the Dead stuff was really, really cool. Really. And I felt like that was different. It felt really different from other stuff. I like jazz music, so I really enjoyed that aspect of this. I'd say it was pretty good. Pixar hasn't had a real big, you know, blow me away hit in a while. So hopefully that'll come. But This was good.
Okay.
So I got to take a drink of water. Hold on a sec.
So for New Year's Eve, we both watched The Avengers, which you'd seen before, but I hadn't.
Yes, many times.
I'm slowly catching up with the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies.
Since we got Disney Plus, you've been catching up on all the Disney-owned properties.
Yeah, very slowly. Like, I'm not a huge, big...
You're not a superhero movie fan.
Yeah. But, I mean, I enjoy them, but I'm not going to, like, binge watch and see them all in, like, a couple of weeks.
Especially Captain America and Thor movies for some reason. I don't know why. So you've seen the original Iron Man, but
which we watched together.
Yes,
at some point.
We think you missed the second Iron Man.
I'm pretty sure I have not seen the second Iron Man, so I'll catch up on that.
Yep, you've seen Captain America.
Yeah,
the first Captain America.
I watched that on my own, and I think I fell asleep partway through because there were some plot points in Avengers that I had missed, which were from Captain America.
The important ones, like that for the bigger MCU, which like the Tesseract and the.
I don't know. I was tired.
I remember watching over your shoulder as I was going to bed. You were watching it in bed. You've seen the first Thor.
And I've seen Thor Ragnarok because I watched him out of order.
Right. You've also seen Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, we watched both Guardians of, them, right? of the Galaxy, both one and two.
Yeah.
Together.
You can probably skip Thor Dark World. I mean, you could see it if you want to be a completist, but you could probably skip that. Most people agree that's the least. You've seen Black Panther.
I did see Black Panther. Yeah. I really liked Black Panther.
Yes, it was very good. Let me see. So that means you've got Iron Man 3, Captain America Winter Soldier, the Ant-Man movies, Captain America Civil War, Avengers Age of Ultron. So luckily, they put them in order on Disney Plus, so you know which ones.
I don't think they were in order before,
they were not.
Because otherwise I would not have watched the Thor movies out of order.
Right.
I remember being confused.
Well,
as to no, which
you
one
watched
which.
Thor Ragnarok a long time ago. Like we were just watching Thor Ragnarok.
No, I watched it on my own.
You watched it on your own?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Then you shouldn't. Because you were like, why doesn't Thor recognize Hulk? I mean, they've met each other before. I'm like, no, this is actually Hulk's first appearance in the rebooted MCU. I mean,
and yet they somehow all kind of know about him, like
because of the Edward Norton movie or the Eric Bana movie, which I can't remember. They made the first Hulk movie twice, and this is before. Technically, it's not part of the MCU, but they kind of make it. Yeah,
they make it something that happened and everyone knows about him, right? And stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was kind of confusing.
It's comic books. Anyway, Avengers, lots of things blow up.
Lots of explosions, lots of blowing up. But that's what I expected.
Mm-hmm. The Battle of New York, which now you saw Daredevil, right?
Yeah.
And Daredevil and Jessica Jones, they keep referencing the Battle of New York.
That's that one?
That's the Battle of New York.
Oh, okay.
That kind of basically destroys half of New York, downtown New York City.
So Loki, basically.
Yes, Loki's invasion of New York City with the Chitauri.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like Loki and Thor. That's kind of fun. I did not expect to like them because I kind of tend to be a bit of a purist in the whole crossover between Norse mythology and our world. Superhero world seemed kind of weird to me at first, but
they're aliens.
They're kind of growing on me.
I like the line that was that Phil Coulson says to Captain America, "Be careful out there, Cap, because you're dealing with gods." And he says, "I'm pretty sure I know God, and God doesn't. I'm pretty sure God doesn't dress like that," or something like that. I mean, what it was a good line. So yeah, Avengers. And then the other movie I watched is a movie that's been came out a few years ago. I don't know, I missed it, but it's called Now You See Me, and it's a classic heist movie, but with magicians, like stage magicians, not, you know, Doctor Strange magicians. That which is another one you have to watch, by the way, in the MCU.
Uh-huh.
It's in the order. But they're stage musicians, and it's really clever. So it's got a really good cast: Aaron Eisenberg. From Cheers, what's his name? Woody Harrelson. I'm really bad at this. Morgan Freeman, Mark Ruffalo, who plays the Hulk in Avengers. And some other folks that you, that I slipped my mind. But anyway, they, they're stage musicians who have been recruited by somebody, we don't know who, to join this secret society. And the initiation is they have to pull off these three big heists, sort of magic tricks, and not get caught. And they do have to do it in public, where everybody, including the cops, can see. And so you kind of follow them. And there's a lot of these. I've said before, I tend to figure out the whodunit part of whodunits. They had me to the end. I did not figure it out till the very end. They kept me, like, I kept bouncing back and forth. They're the one. No. Okay, maybe that. No. They're the one. No. Like, they had me jumping back and forth on that.
Like, they had you jumping back and forth, but were any of the ones you suspected the one, or was it somebody who was, like, totally not?
No, no. Well, basically, I suspected everybody at one point or another, so.
Okay.
So,
the ones I really like is when it turns out to be, like, none of the above, and you're like, wait.
This one, the one that turned out to be, was the least likely one. I figured it out very close to the reveal, like, maybe a few scenes before the reveal, or one or two scenes before the reveal.
Uh-huh.
But it was not a likely suspect. Let's put it that way. But it's good. It was really good. I liked it. I liked the gags, like the tricks that they did, the magical tricks, including, like, there's this one thing they do it's in the very beginning, the very opening, as you see each of the magicians doing their stuff, like their street magic or their stage show or whatever, before they get recruited. And one of the things, like the Aaron Eisenberg one, was he's doing card tricks on the streets of New York, and he's got this deck of cards, and he's looking into the camera as if you're the mark that he's got, you know, the person that he's working with. And he flips the deck at you, and he's saying, pick a card, any card. And as the viewer, you pick a card. And I tell you, when you pick your card, like, he turns around and goes, let's see your card. And the building lights up with the card, like the lights of the building make up the card, you know, whatever the card is, ace of spades, two of hearts, you know, that sort of thing. And it will be the card you've picked. And I'm not sure how they do it. It's got to be some sort of visual thing they do with the frame where that one card is the card that your eye catches. That's the one you... There's some sort of psychological thing they're doing to you, which is kind of interesting and fun. And it's a great way to start the movie, because it sets the stage for you to do... They're doing something here. This is very interesting that they, right off the bat, they do a magic trick on the audience, and it sucks you right in. So
that's very effective.
Yes. And then there are parts where they do a big gag, and you're like, wow, how do they do that? Are they doing, is it real magic? And then then someone comes in and explains how it happened. Like, someone, you know, dismantles it and says, no, this is how they tricked you. You know, So that's also kind of satisfying. So I really enjoyed it. And there's a couple, there's at least one sequel. I'm not sure if, I think there might be two sequels. So I recommend it. That was good. Now You See Me. It was a good, fun movie. All right. So that's what we watched. Let's talk quickly about books. I'm still working on my giant novel. So I planned that this would be something I would be working on for several weeks at the end of the year. But I want to talk a little bit about my Goodreads goal. I've mentioned before, Goodreads.com, that lets you set a reading goal for the year. And I've been doing it for 5 or 6 years. And my goal this year was 35 books. It's been, to be honest, 35 books for several years. And in 2018, 2019, I did not reach my goal of 35. It was like 1 year was 31, another year was 32. This year, I went way over to 43 books, which...
So what made the difference?
Dresden Files.
Right. A lot of short, quick books.
I mean, they weren't especially short, but they're very quick reads. They're really fun. You power through them. They're really quick reads.
You know, I think that's one reason why I tend to get really high book counts, is because I read a lot of, like, quick genre fiction, and I read a lot of juvenile fiction when when I'm feeling tired or whatever, or just pre-reading books for the kids. I read a lot of short, quick books.
Right. Like right now I'm reading the Brandon Sanderson book from the Stormlight Archive. And this is a tome. This thing is massive. And it's great. I really enjoy it. But it's I've been reading this book for 2 weeks and I'm 30% of the way through it.
That's like the year I read The Brothers Karamazov.
Oh, yeah.
That book took forever.
Right.
Like, and it was good, but it took forever.
I don't want to read a book that long, like War and Peace. I don't want to read one book that long. I'd take a break. But and I also read some nonfiction books that tend to be a little longer, like history books. So they tend to be a little longer, too. But I'm setting my goal at 35 again, even though I went to 43, because I'm not going to read another Dresden Files this year. You know what I mean? So it's sort of an artificial goal. Like Jeff Miller, friend of ours, he reads like 200 something books a year.
That's crazy.
Yeah. He does a lot of audiobooks on high speed. But he sets his goal at like 2 books and 3 books.
Why?
I don't know. Because it's Jeff. He's just because he likes to see like you've exceeded your goal by 1,010% or something like that. Because it's Jeff.
I never set numerical goals for myself. I just don't. But I like to keep count.
Yeah.
This year I was not very good at keeping count. Honestly, I did it sort of retroactively, like after a couple months, several times throughout the year. And I'm pretty sure I missed a few. But my official count was 46. Mm. But that didn't include books that I read aloud to the kids. And it didn't include all of the audiobooks I listened to, although it included a couple of them. And there were a whole bunch of books this year, more than most years, that I picked up, I read a few chapters, or I read half the book, and then I stopped.
Mm.
So there are a lot of books I spent a lot of time on, but I didn't count towards my, like,
so you can,
official...
Yeah, one of the things Goodreads does is it'll also count pages. And so if you read half the book and you put the number of, you know, you put where you stopped in...
Right.
It'll include that in your count. Like I read, it said 17,000 something pages this year, whereas last year was like 11,000 something. So even though like the Dresden File books might be a little shorter or a little faster, I still read.
You still read more pages.
6,000 more pages, like a third more pages this year.
I'm just not good at consistency with like Goodreads.
On Kindle. So that helps.
Yeah, most of, I mean, like maybe a third of what I read is on Kindle.
Right.
Most of my books aren't.
And the Kindle integrates its own, you know, Goodreads is owned by Amazon, so it just automatically updates.
Would it track like your Audible books if you are also doing like audiobooks? Would that automatically sync?
I don't think it does because I've been doing Doctor Who Audible books. And it hasn't synced those, although maybe there's a way to tell it to. I'd have to look at the Audible app and see if it could automatically do that. Because because if I included those, that's even more. Because some early Doctor Who is only available as audio, the audio narration, and not just, they don't have the video anymore. Someone threw away the tapes.
Oops.
Yes. Well, they reused the tapes back then.
Yeah, little did they know.
Little did they know that people would be wanting to watch them 50 years later.
Yeah.
You were going to talk about a book, a Terry Pratchett book.
Yeah,
Weird Sisters.
Weird Sisters. Yes, I read Weird Sisters, which is a Terry Pratchett sort of takeoff on Macbeth with a little bit of Hamlet thrown in. And so it's one of the witches series of books. So within his Discworld universe, there are several like streams that he kind of follows. And so the witches are kind of their own little sub series, I guess you would say. And so you've got the three witches who then become sort of the three witches in the Macbeth storyline.
Right.
And you've got the king who's killed. Except it kind of becomes Hamlet-like because the ghost of the king who's killed wants revenge and they have to find the missing heir to the throne. And but there's an evil duke who's taken the throne and his evil wife, and it's fun. Cool. I actually ended up giving it to Bella to read because she just read Macbeth this year, last year.
Right. For school.
Yeah, that was one of her optional Shakespeare classes over the summer that she really loved. And so I thought she would find it funny, and she did. I heard her giggling in her room.
I started to give them some of the Star Wars books that are not like just kids' books. Like I gave them the Thrawn series, her and Sophie. And I think Anthony's read the Thrawn books too.
Yeah, it's hard to keep him out of books
yeah.
when they're on the Kindle.
Right. So there are some I don't know that I would give to them. They contain some adult themes, nothing too graphic, but sometimes they talk, there's some reference to same-sex relationships and then other things just like war crimes and that sort of stuff. And some of the books are more suitable than others. So just put it that
right.
way. So, but the Thrawn books I really liked, and they really, because Thrawn shows up in Star Wars Rebels, and will show up in the future in the Ahsoka series, that I thought it would be good because they are really good books. They're really good.
Maybe at some point I'll pick those up when I'm looking for something to read. Right now, I'm joined a book club for the beginning of the year on Facebook, reading The Friendship of Christ, I think, by Robert Hugh Benson.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm looking forward to that. It starts this week. We're reading two chapters a week, which seems ambitious to me, but I'm assured that it's only like 10 pages a week, so... It sounds doable.
Okay.
And I also started a novel that's called Empire of the Wild. It's sort of a werewolf, loup-garou novel that takes place in Canada. The protagonist is Canadian First Peoples.
Interesting.
And so it's very interesting because it really focuses on that Native American mythology.
So like a skinwalker almost?
Yeah, kind of. I'm really curious to see where the story is going.
Okay.
But it's a page turner.
So to close things out, just quickly, because it's Epiphany, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Feast of Epiphany and this reflection from our favorite Trappistine abbess.
Mm-hmm.
Mother Sophia from Mount St. Mary's Abbey, who always has these great reflections on the readings, and this week's it's titled "The Gift That We Are." It's Epiphany that the Magi bring the gifts, and it kind of talks about, you know, everyone's got a gift. The Magi got gifts. The shepherds probably have gifts. The drummer boy's got his pum pum pum, and there we are, often standing there in the corner, sad, like trying to hide behind the camel. Did you bring the gift? I didn't bring the gift. I thought you were bringing the gift. No, I don't have the gift. And, you know, what do we have to give? And so she says, on this day, each of us is drawn to approach the child and lay open our treasury. Our gift, she says, is the treasury of the heart, whose contents are infinitely precious. What's inside? Dark and dusty places, chaos and mystery, but also beauty, richness, prayer, and worship, a pleasing odor, hidden suffering and compassion. Step one, open. Step two, let him look. Step three, let him take what he wants. Which is a very Benedictine thing, isn't it? To sort of open, I'm open, I'm an open book. I'm just open to the Lord. Take what you want.
Right.
Very, it's almost, in a sense, passive. Like becoming docile before the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Then she kind of goes through, like, in like the three gifts of the Magi are the three gifts in us. So gold, our gold is the deepest, truest, most beautiful self, fresh from the hands of my Creator. This is the self God sees in his dreams and smiles. This is us in our purest sense as he created us. There's the frankincense, where we become a living censer, you know, because the frank incense. And we're, you know, burned up, offering the incense of prayer night and day. We become a vessel of God's glory. So, you know, our worship is a gift that we give to God. And then the myrrh is, and this was kind of interesting. So, you know, myrrh is ointment, spices, perfume, And she says it joins intimacy and sacrifice into one. And it kind of, I think the way, what she's trying to draw out is this idea of the perfume is also chrism is a type of ointment that is used for baptism. We are anointed in our vocation. So like, especially like a priest or, you know, so confirmation, we are anointed. Priests are anointed to, for service. And then at our burial, we are perfumed in, you know, for burial. We are anointed for our burial. And so myrrh is sort of our, accompanies us on our journey of our life, of our life through the sacraments. And that's also a gift. Our lives are a gift. So it's a very interesting way of looking out, you know, so, you know, in that case, she says, my body given, my life poured out. It's a very interesting way of looking at the gift we give to Christ, an analog to the gifts of the Magi is the gift of ourself. We give ourselves, all of ourselves, the good, the bad, the ugly, to God, and he takes that.
Hmm. You know? I like that.
Yeah, God does, you know, Jesus, in the sense of his divinity, doesn't get any richer by being given gold, frankincense, and myrrh. He's the one, the word through whom the universe was created. All of it belongs to him in the first place.
Right. He made the gold and the frankincense and the myrrh in the first place.
Right. But like C.S. Lewis says, you know, when the child takes his what's the word, the wages that children earn? The
allowance?
Allowance, thank you. The child gives his allowance of sixpence to buy a birthday gift or a Christmas present for his father. The father is, you know, receives sixpence, but is none the richer, but yet it's the gift, you know, the father paid for the gift, but the gift is bigger than the money that he paid out. It's better than if he went and bought it for himself because it's a gift from his child.
Right.
And that's the same way when we give our gift of ourselves, we're not making God greater by giving ourselves. But our gift still is more valuable for us having given it to him. So I don't know. I thought that was a really nice reflection on the Epiphany. Speaking of which, if you want to find out more about the Magi and who they really were and the mystery behind them, Jimmy Akin did an episode of Mysterious World last in 2019. So not last year, but like in 2019 at Christmas time, around this time. On the mystery of the Magi, I will endeavor to remember to put a link to that in the show notes.
I need to listen to that one still.
Yeah, it's good. And he's got an update planned for maybe next Christmas on some of this sort of stuff. So we've done one on the dating of Christmas Day. So that was in 2018. We talked about when is Christmas? Was it December 25th? What kind of date was it? And the whole like Sol Invictus, and it was preempting a pagan holiday. Spoilers, it wasn't. And then that one was about the Magi themselves and who were they and what were they following and that sort of thing. So very interesting stuff to do. All right, let's wrap it up.
Okay.
Before we do, we take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Victor C., Michael F., Matthew S., Chris H., and Marissa S. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets on all the shows at StarQuest. And now is a great time to become a StarQuest patron because a generous StarQuest supporter has given us this opportunity to match your gift. So when you start a new Patreon monthly pledge at sqpn.com/give, the first 3 months will be matched by an equal amount from our donor. So if you become a new patron at, say, $10 a month, after 3 months, the donor will give $30 to StarQuest to support all our shows, including this one, which makes your gift go even further. So if you've been thinking of becoming a StarQuest patron, now is the time. Visit sqpn.com/give. So if you have any feedback for us on anything we talked about today, we'd love to hear from you. You can comment at sqpn.com/bets, that's BETTS, or the SQPN Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And have links to everything in our show notes at sqpn.com. If you have not yet done so, be sure to subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or at the SQPN YouTube channel. You should also hit the bell to get notifications. Until next time, I'm Don Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.